Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location. Today, most of the program will be spent with an in-depth, on-the-ground look at Venezuela. And what we have been told in the media is propaganda. We'll be hearing from someone who has been there and reading from current reports of some of the dissidents, not the dissidents of the Maduro government, but rather the dissident journalists who are not willing to toe the line. They're telling the truth. You'll hear their story. We'll be having him on in about 15 minutes. His name is, and by the way, he is going to be broadcasting by Skype. He is Christopher Black. And Christopher is a Canadian attorney activist. He is a community organizer. He's worked with the famous Toronto Black activist attorney Charles Roach on criminal cases before entering international criminal law. He defended Rwanda's general against dozens of genocide charges at the Rwanda War Crimes Tribunal, leading to his acquittal. And he was among the first lawyers to lay war crime charges against NATO for its attack on Yugoslavia, and went on to head the legal committee for President Milosevic's defense. And by the way, for those who are not aware of it, he was found innocent of the charges against him, but he died in prison. Other crimes Charles laid down on behalf of the International Criminal Court include charges against, I'm not going to take any more time. There's so much to do. But he also went after NATO for its invasion of Libya. Good for him on that. So he's going to be guiding us through what really is happening in Venezuela, the truth as compared to what the mainstream media shared. We begin with the latest on health and healing. From Korea University, we have eating black raspberries can decrease heart disease risk. That's correct. Black raspberries can significantly lower arterial stiffness. That's a measure of cardiovascular disease, and that's important. And it also helps if you have obesity or insulin-resistant problems. So for diabetics, for people who are overweight, it works. And this was a double-blind study, placebo-controlled for 12 weeks. Blood pressure came down, degree of vascular stiffness improved, circulation numbers of EPCs and various markers of inflammation came down. So quite simply, it's one of the best things you could do to prevent a heart attack and have healthier heart and less inflammation, black raspberries. And that's because they contain flavonoids, tannins, phenolic acids, triazole, and resveratrol. Those are all in there in good amounts. Separately, from Zurich and the University of Zurich, a vitamin that stops the aging process of organs. Now, this is interesting because you're familiar with nicotinamide riboside. It's really amazing. It has already been shown in several studies to be effective in boosting metabolism. And now a team of researchers at the Laboratory of Integrated Systems Physiology has unveiled even more of its secrets. An article that was just published in Science describes the positive effects of the nicotinamide riboside on the functioning of stem cells, and these effects can only be described as restorative. That means it's one of the ultimate anti-aging for the heart, for the muscles, and their ability to repair them following an injury is also improved. And then mitochondria, also useful in stem cells. So it improves stem cells. So under normal circumstances, these stem cells, reacting to signals sent by the body, regenerate damaged organs by producing new specific cells, at least in young bodies. But when a cell is fatigued, when it gets old, that doesn't happen very well. There's very poor regeneration or even degeneration in certain tissues or organs. Along comes this nutrient, which is also called vitamin B3, and its precursor to NAD, the molecule that plays a key role in mitochondrial activity. And it helps. A lot of you are taking NAD, good for you. Let's say 20 to 100 milligrams would be a lot and be outstanding. So it's just, It's one of the different approaches to regenerative health, but there's good science backing it up. Then, from the European Union, their age project, it showed that a Mediterranean-style diet decreases the levels of inflammatory marker, and you know it, it's called C-reactive protein. When it's elevated, you have a greater likelihood of having a heart attack or stroke. It's linked to aging, and it's not good, and yet most people don't know it exists, never have it tested. Easy to test, and at least you know where you stand. Is it elevated, normal, or below normal? And it's a protein, one of the main inflammatory markers, linked with the aging process. Now, the Mediterranean diet helps lower that, and that's important. So these are the things that we should know. Now, also, this was the first project that goes in such depths into the effects of the Mediterranean diet on health of elderly populations. And they're talking about people over 65 here. So if you're over 65 and you follow a healthy Mediterranean-style diet and you also take vitamin B3 or NAD, you have every reason to live a longer life. You have every reason to see that your blood sugar is more normal, and you turn off C-reactive protein, bring it down, so it doesn't represent a threat for you. Now, from the University of Glasgow comes a study, and this is one of hundreds. Red meat, and we're eating too much, and we have too few vegetables. It's a double negative. Too few vegetables, negative. Too much meat, negative. And it increases your body's biological age. I talked about this recently in a lecture I did in New York. The whole lecture was based upon how old are you? We know your chronological age, you're 50, 32, 90, but what's your real age? That's your biological age. And what we found is that people have no idea what their biological age is. Well, there's a mathematical formula you can come up with. I'm not going to go into it today because it would take too long. It took 3 hours for me to explain it at the lecture. And I'm doing a documentary this week. I'm away at retreat helping some of our WBA listeners, and you'll probably hear peacocks in the background. And because we have about 50 of them all over the place. But it's a beautiful environment. One of the first things I ask people is, how old do you think you are biologically? What do you mean? Well, for every good thing you've done, and for every wrong thing you've done, your cell pays the price. So you could be 50 and be 30 biologically. That's good. Or you could be 50 and be 100 biologically. That's not good. And this study talked about the biological age and what contributes to it. And sure enough, it says we're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. We're eating too much meat. And this was published in the peer reviewed journal Aging. So you don't want a lot of the phosphate levels increase because you're eating red meat. So you start eating red meat, you have a bad diet to begin with, and that's going to increase your biological age. And that really puts time against you. It's taking time off your life. In contrast to chronological age, which is really irrelevant. The study which looked at participants from the most deprived to the least deprived in this National Health Survey Greater Glasgow Health Board area also demonstrated that males are worse affected. So if you have a male and a female who are both 50 and they're both eating the same diet, same amount of exercise and stress management, the male is going to die sooner. So it's a heads up. I want everyone to live a longer life. And you've got to pay attention to the little things you take for granted that are ritualized parts of your day. It could be helping you, making the right choice, or killing you, making the wrong choice. This was done in collaboration with the Institute of Cancer Sciences and Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. Also found that high phosphate levels in men, that correlates to kidney damage, loss of kidney function, and that's from meat. So all of you on high-protein diets, please pay attention. It's an unhealthy diet. It's a fad diet. And you could be killing yourself every time you have meat. Oh, by the way, meat, fish, eggs, and dairy are also in phosphate territory that can cause you problems. And yet we have a hard time changing. We should. And for those of you who have a common cold, from the University of Helsinki comes a new study that the common cold duration is shortened by both zinc gluconate and zinc acetate lozenges. So that's important. So get your zinc. 20, 30 milligrams is all you really need. And this was published in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine. And they looked at 7 randomized trials with zinc and found that the duration of colds was shortened by 33%. That's important. Now, if they also took vitamin C, vitamin D, and vitamin A at the same time, well, there's no reason to get a cold at all. Or if you get it, to get over it real quick, 24 to 48 hours. Also, ginkgo biloba helps protect against the toxic cognitive effects of aluminum, especially aluminum chlorine. Now, this is from the Atomic Energy Authority. So ginkgo, that's that ancient herb, and the extract of that helps protect the brain from the toxic effects of aluminum chloride. And aluminum chloride has been linked to autism, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis. And in children, autism is very common, and you're going to find in the tissue of the brain aluminum. So make sure that if you have a child who has autism, that you work with a licensed nutritionist or a physician who is fully aware, or holistic nurse, to get the aluminum out. You can do natural chelating processes by increasing chlorophyll and vitamin C, which grab a hold of the aluminum and take it out, but also ginkgo biloba makes a big difference as well. Also, they have, in this latest research from Northumbria University, which is in the United Kingdom, rosemary aroma can aid children's working memory. This is good news. So if you just simply have an inhaler or a mister in a room, and where you put a couple drops of the rosemary essential oils in a diffuser and it blows it out into the room as a nice mist, that can significantly enhance the working memory in children. And this is one of the findings of a study presented by Dr. Mark Ross at Northumbria University at the British Psychological Society's annual conference. So, how about that? Something inexpensive, easy, smells good, and can help the memory in children. And finally, from the Central Hospital of Zhubo, which is in China, green tea and the active ingredients, EGCG, is important for gestational diabetes. It can help lessen it because of the active ingredients. So if you want to improve gestational diabetes outcomes in both mothers and newborn infants, EGCG or green tea. This was published in the Journal of Human Nutrition and Dietetics. That's the latest on health and nutrition. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come back in a moment with our guest. If our guest is on the line, we're going to go right to him, and we will be back in a minute. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. What we're dealing with today is we're dealing with the media that are acting more like supplicants to the establishment, doing exactly what they tell us. So if they tell us left and right, conservative and liberal, that Maduro is a dictator killing his own people, starving them to death, they're having to eat grass and rats, and they want the government overturned and restored to order and prosperity. It was the most prosperous nation in the Western Hemisphere in Central and South America until the election many years ago, Hugo Chavez. People tend to believe that, especially if they have really dramatic footage of people being marching and demonstrating and being attacked by the government forces. So the narrative is similar in every single situation. They'll use the same talking points. So you know they're all reading from the same script. Why shouldn't we believe this? Then again, we said, why should we believe weapons of mass destruction? We couldn't find they existed. In fact, on the program that you're listening to, on five separate occasions, we had people on from inside the intelligence community telling us that Curveball, the so-called expert source that was being used by Judith Miller of the New York Times to beat the drums for war, was a fraud. Nobody listened. Our audience listened, but compared to the New York Times and Washington Post and CNN, oh, they really get hyped. They love a good war. Of course, they don't pay attention to the consequences of these wars. They don't go out and count the children who are homeless. Families have had to leave their neighborhood after living there for generations. Sectarian violence, destruction with depleted uranium that will be there for decades, much like Agent Orange is still in Vietnam, causing birth defects three generations on. That study just came out this week. But let's not look in the rearview mirror of our foreign policy. If we like people, if we like Barack Obama, and he was likable, then we just say, so what? And if we like Bill Clinton and his efforts with NATO in Yugoslavia, say, so what? They deserved it. We're always doing this, and we're about to do it again. Venezuela, crisis and another American-backed regime change. My guest, who I gave you his background a little earlier, Christopher Black. So we're going to say hello to Chris now. Nice to have you with us today, Chris.
Oh, it's very good to be here. I'm a great admirer of your show, and it's an honor to be on it. So thank you for asking me.
Thank you. Chris, we are being flooded with large amounts of propaganda regarding Venezuela's characterizing Maduro as a brutal dictator. We saw the same picture being painted prior to NATO invading Libya and the murder of Gaddafi, and Hillary Clinton actually finding his mutilated body where he had been sodomized and stabbed through the rectum with knives. She laughed. We came, we saw he died. Remember, and then she cackled? And the media didn't chastise her. None of the media's criticized Obama or Clinton or the State Department or Gloria Nuland. No one gets criticized, no matter how bad the genocide is, as long as you're of their party, as long as they like you or have some interest. So here we are again. Although there's not an ounce of truth that the new president-to-be that we appointed, his claims have not been found to be legitimate. He has not been duly elected. And some of our past guests, including Greg Palast, Abby Martin, Eva Gollinger, have painted a completely different picture of what is taking place in Venezuela compared to the images broadcast by our media. And I would remind listeners that international agencies have acknowledged that Venezuela has one of the most honest and best monitored election systems in the developing world. Jimmy Carter acknowledged this. He was there. It is far more honest than the American electoral process, which is utterly corrupt. So I would like you to begin by focusing on the opposition candidate and some of your research on him. He's being painted as this new crusader. He is honest and diligent and for the people. And I find something extremely disturbing about this person the United States is now supporting to be Washington's puppet to challenge standing Venezuelan President Maduro as the leader of the country. It's my personal opinion, but even when I look at his photos or videos when he speaks, I sense a kind of villainous darkness. Unlike Chavez, this is not the kind of person I would want to lead a coup in the front lines, although he is egging his supporters to commit acts of violence against the government. What can you tell us about him? Give us your detailed analysis, please.
Well, he's a man who's been groomed by the United States and the CIA for over a decade. He's been back and forth to the United States and has lots of connections there. But in Venezuela, he is the leader of a very small right-wing, far right-wing party, which didn't even run in the elections, as far as I'm aware. I boycotted the elections in Venezuela. And but he's obviously being used as a convenient foil for the United States to try and instigate an overthrow of the socialist regime government in Venezuela. But they've done this, in every country that they've attacked. They've always used people inside. There are always traitors inside every country willing to take money and seek advantage by being supported by outside powers if they can themselves take power. And you're right, Guaido, when you see him speak, doesn't speak with any passion or with any sense of purpose or mission. He talks with a blank stare and with no commitment whatsoever. He's just an empty suit that they've put in place, and they continue to use him until he will no longer serve a function. I mean, some people even suggested they could assassinate him and blame Maduro for that. He's expendable. He means nothing to the United States. He's just a cipher that they put in there, and he's going to keep causing trouble as long as he remains free. I guess Maduro has refrained from arresting him so far because they'll be accused of oppressing the opposition, of course. But then again, it's quite clear he's guilty of multiple acts of treason, so he should be arrested. But what they do with him is up to them. But you're right; he's a man whose background, if you delve into it, he was in the United States and was educated there and trained there and sent back and is fulfilling his function. So he's not in any sense a representative of any really mass democratic opposition in Venezuela. That's false.
Anyone who takes a look at the actual amount of oil in the ground in every country immediately sees that Venezuela has the most oil reserves of any country on the planet, including more than Saudi Arabia, more than Russia, and 10 times more than the United States. So give us some background on what it's like to be an average citizen living in Venezuela today, as comparing that image of what they do each day, how they go about their life, whether they're eating grass and rats, as we've been led to believe. What is the life like right now for the average citizen?
Well, the average citizen there, I mean, we're getting conflicting reports, but I'm relying on Alfred de Zayas, who was the UN special rapporteur who was sent there recently by the UN to investigate the situation of the people in Venezuela and what was going on, and came back with a report stating that, yeah, there were hardships, and there was were problems in the economy and with people getting access to different goods, but he said that the majority of the problems are caused by the United States embargo, what they call the sanctions, and that is causing most of the problems for the people. It's not because of government policy or government actions or government planning. And in fact, for the majority of people in Venezuela, since Chavez came into power in 1998, and then through to Maduro now, the Venezuelan Bolivarian revolutionary government has done everything it can to improve the living standards of the poorer classes in Venezuela. They built millions of homes. They're trying to establish another 1.5 million homes for the poor. They've given out millions of computers to schools for free. They've tried to raise wages, stabilize prices. They've tried to redistribute income so that poor people are pulled up into the society, and which in turn supports the economy because now poor people have more money to spend. So the overall view you have of Venezuela is a socialist country, well, a semi-socialist country, really, because it's still not really a completely socialist country. But it's got a progressive government which is trying to help the working class and the poor people, and is not really harming the capitalist class that much. They still function as they always did before. So the shortages that are being experienced by buyers in some shops, which are exaggerated, by the way, people are not starving, people are not eating grass. You hear these stories about North Korea, they're as false as the stories about North Korea, which is completely insane. But on average, as I say, most people are doing better under this government than they were before 1998, because if you look at Venezuelan history from the 1890s through the 1980s, you had a series of dictatorships and corrupt governments where poor people weren't counted at all. So this government is a vast improvement over what was existing, say, 20 years ago. So all the problems they face now is... And I recommend people read Mr. Desaias' report, because it's very thorough. You can find it on the UN site. And he goes into some detail about the conditions in Venezuela and what's causing them. And he has great praise for the government of Maduro and what they're trying to do.
What have been the machinations of the group, the Lima Group? Since most people have never heard of the Lima Group, I want you to take us on a detailed journey into its workings, how the United States set up this puppet group, and what it's doing to cause the problems in Venezuela and how it supported the failed coup.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Lima Group was set up in Peru, in Lima, in the city of Lima. And with the countries which presently support the American aggression against Venezuela, but including Canada, Colombia, Brazil, and other right-wing regimes in Central and South America. But one of the leading lights is Canada, which has had a very, very bad reputation the last 20 years for its actions against various countries in support of U.S. aggression. But Canada was involved in the coup, one of the coups against Chavez in 2002. They were involved in an attempted coup against Maduro, I think, 3 years ago, in 2015. The RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, were involved, a person that were involved in an attempted coup down there. And Canada is one of the most vocal and vicious of the Lima Group in support of Pompeo and John Bolton and their aggression against Venezuela. So, but they have no legitimacy except as basically American puppets following the American lead. But Canada is one of the worst because Canada has such a reputation in the world, undeserved, in my opinion, but it has this reputation of being a country dedicated to peace and peacekeeping and being very nice people and so on. So it gives a veneer of acceptability to this aggression against Venezuela. And Canada's played that role in Yugoslavia, in Libya, and against North Korea, China, Russia, and so on and so forth. It supports Nazis in Ukraine. So you were dealing with a series of really reactionary governments, including the Canadian government, in support of direct American aggression against Venezuela, as you say, basically so the American government can secure the oil supplies for themselves. It's not the only reason. They don't like any socialist governments existing anywhere. But you're right, one of the main reasons is that they want to secure control of that oil. And if you ask yourself why they want to secure control of that oil now, I would suggest that it has to do with China and oil supplies to China. They're trying to cut off oil supplies to China through Iran, and if they control the Venezuelan oil supplies, China gets some of its oil from Venezuela, they can cut that supply too. So there's a lot of things going on here.
Take us behind
the Lima Group has now also in last year sent a file to the International Criminal Court prosecutor asking her to investigate Maduro for crimes against the people, crimes against humanity in Venezuela, suppressing opposition, they allege. There's no investigation begun yet that I know about, but they're going to try and use the ICC to criminalize Mr. Maduro, as they did Gaddafi, as was done with Milosevic and several other people. Saddam Hussein was declared to be a criminal. So they tend to use quasi-legal methods. They use propaganda, and they use their good reputation in the world to commit crimes, basically.
Even though the Obama administration was extremely belligerent towards Chavez and even tried to take out Maduro after Chavez's death, this Lima Group was a neocon effort started by Trump. So who is pulling Trump's, you know, who's pulling Trump's strings in this aggressive stance against Maduro? Who's behind the scenes?
Well, yeah. My view of, like, I'm an outsider from my view up here in Canada. It doesn't matter to me whether the Democrats are in power or the Republicans in your country. The policy, the foreign policy stays much the same. The only change is in details of tactics and strategy. But the overall thrust is always the same, to exert American hegemony wherever they can. They've done that since the end of World War II, and they're trying to maintain that hegemony in the face of a resurgent Russia and a very resurgent China. And Iran and other countries, India. But the United States establishment or leadership, however you may define them, seek to maintain American control of the world economy, the world energy resources and supplies for their own benefit, and they will do everything they can to maintain that dominance. So, whereas Obama had one strategy trying to undermine Chavez or Maduro, which didn't work, they're now moving to a more open and aggressive policy, where they're openly talking about military intervention, and now committing aggression by instigating civil unrest inside Venezuela and supporting members of the so-called opposition who are trying to overthrow the legitimate government. That's an act of aggression under the Nuremberg Principles, under the UN Charter. Under the Kellogg-Briand Pact of 1928, if we remember that. These are all acts of aggression. And if you read the Nuremberg Judgment, the striking resemblance between what Hitler did to Austria in 1937-38 is very strikingly echoed in Venezuela, because what Hitler did in 1938 with Austria was also back an opposition leader in Austria to try and secure dominance over Austria. And they inserted people inside Austria, caused trouble, threatened to invade. All the same tactics were used by Hitler, and these tactics were condemned by the Nuremberg Court as crimes against peace. And that's exactly what the United States is doing with Venezuela.
And who exactly is supposed to bring these charges against the United States, and why would they have to do it in Venezuela before actually doing it because of Iraq and Afghanistan and in Yemen right now?
Well,
by the way, just as an aside, this past week the Correspondents' Dinner was occurring in Washington, and these are people who get up and prance like peacocks for how unique they are. And I was curious how many of these journalists for all the major networks and cable outlets from the beginning challenged Saudi Arabia's right to invade Yemen, the United States' full military support with intelligence satellites, reconnaissance boots on the ground in Yemen, the poorest country in the Middle East, where 20 million people are starving to death out of 29 million. And I didn't see a single story by any of them for 3 years.
No.
And how many of them complained about taking the number one country in Africa, Libya, and turning it into a complete mess? No one condemned the people. So I have no confidence in the media whatsoever at this point. I think they're all substantially compromised and biased.
You're right. The propaganda in the mass media is tremendous. I mean, that's all you read. If you were anti-Russian hysteria in the United States and here in Canada is intense and mounting every day. Now it's in Canada. We've got the Toronto Star put out a very anti-Chinese piece in their paper 2 days ago. So the propaganda is used to try and convince people who otherwise would not support these wars to join in and support these wars as concern for humanitarian principles and so on, and the right to protect, all these bogus, nonsense, quasi-legal myths that the United States and its allies have invented as cover for their aggression. Yemen is a prime example. Exactly. Nobody says anything about what's going on and the aggression taking place, supported by the West. And why? Because Yemen, why is there a war in Yemen? Really, because Yemen is on the south of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula and is an important control point for oil from the Suez Canal and also from the Gulf of Hormuz for oil going towards India and China. That's why they're fighting over that, in my view, but there are other issues as well. But the propaganda has been, you've seen that since 1999 when the NATO attacked Yugoslavia. They made up the same stories about the government of Milosevic causing atrocities inside Yugoslavia, and the United States and its allies have to go and save the people. You saw the same thing in Libya. You saw the same thing in Saddam Hussein's case in Iraq. They invented weapons of mass destruction, which even if he had them, would not be a justified pretext for attacking Iraq. In that case, the whole world can attack the United States many times over, because it's the main the country that has the most weapons of mass destruction, of course. But the mass media is hopeless. It's very difficult to watch any of the mass media. In fact, most of my friends, I can't watch the CBC or CNN or PBS or any of the mass media anymore in North America or in Europe, because they all put out the same stories on the same dates and almost exactly the same wording. One wonders whether there's a central mechanism issuing these stories. But you're right. It's terrible.
We do know that the Pentagon's budget for propaganda is $500 million a year, $500 million a year. You can put out a lot of stories, and the talking points are virtually identical. Now, aside from Venezuela's nationalizing its invaluable oil resources, Maduro's has never challenged the global governance system, unlike Gaddafi, who made efforts to put Africa in a different position. He wanted to work away from the International Monetary Fund. Oh, and by the way, interesting that the president of the International Monetary Fund today, as we're speaking, was found guilty in a court of law for giving about $400 million to one of her friends. And she was found guilty, but they said she will not have to serve prison time. I wonder what would happen if you or I engaged in, you know, money laundering and or bribery or something illegal. We would do a lot of time in jail, but that's the power of those elites. They can commit a crime and do no time. But unlike Gaddafi, who really did not want the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and their loan scams, he wanted to get everyone off the petrodollar and create a pan-African currency using the gold denier and start an African bank of settlements, no interest.
Right.
And overall try to unite Africa into some kind of solidarity that would give the continent integrity over American and Western economic colonialism.
Yes.
And Maduro is quite insignificant on the world stage and far weaker than Chavez. So what other reasons besides oil do you see for the United States to set up its puppet regime in Venezuela with this clown, this what is his name?
Guaido.
Guaido. Yeah, what might be, you know, might be another reason economically or politically to dominate Latin America in general?
Well, I think it's a reaction to, as we say, I think probably first is the oil and control, for the United States to control all the oil in the world if it can. But secondly, I think to try and control it so China can't have it. Except at a certain price. Thirdly, because they don't want any semblance of progressive or socialist governments being set up anywhere in South America or anywhere else. They've again threatened Cuba, and they were threatening Cuba with sending troops to Venezuela, and it's all nonsense, but they're accusing it of Maduro being a communist. I'm not sure he is, but they got rid of Kirchner in Argentina. They got rid of Lula in Brazil. They got rid of, I forgot the man's name now, in Ecuador. Moreno, I guess it was, or somebody. And there was a shift about 10 years ago to the left in South America. That's been forcibly reversed. And reactionary governments have come to the fore in Brazil and Argentina. And the result is a mess. And they want to do the same in Venezuela. The American government or the American elite can't stand any government in the world who refuses to kowtow to them. It's that simple. They liked Russia when it was under Yeltsin because Yeltsin did everything they wanted. and let them run.
He was a drunken fool. He was totally compromised.
Totally compromised.
Chris, several of your past war crime investigations have focused upon NATO that you briefly mentioned. NATO has now far expanded its original mandate and its militaristic role in the Middle East, such as Iraq and Syria and Africa, notably, as we just mentioned, Libya and elsewhere outside of Europe's borders. Do you see any indication, given that most, if not all, of NATO member nations have voiced their support of the U.S.-backed puppets going into these Latin American and Central American countries, that NATO would be getting involved in any military invasion to remove Maduro?
It wouldn't be whether NATO itself as officially would be called in to attack Venezuela. It's possible, but I don't think they need to do that. They just need to call in Canada, United States, its own forces in Colombia and Brazil to attack from the left and the south and cause chaos. Whether to bring in the entire NATO structure, I don't think they could do, because there's a lot of opposition in Europe to this American adventure in Venezuela. I mean, Spain is protecting Lopez, the man that went and sought refuge in their embassy yesterday, even though they just elected a new socialist. Well, the socialist government got reelected marginally in Spain the other day. But yet that government is giving refuge to Lopez. But Germany and France and so on, although they're supporting the United States, they're not really supporting any military action against Venezuela, and Trump is getting a lot of negative reaction in Europe because of sanctions against so-called sanctions, embargoes, trade disputes, pressure on Europe, especially Germany, which is hurting Germany and France. So there's a lot of resentment in Europe. I don't think that they could call on NATO itself to attack like they did when it attacked Yugoslavia, but I don't think they need it. They just need to cobble together the coalition of the willing or the coalition of the criminal, which would be the Lima countries plus Canada and the United States. That would be sufficient to cause a lot of trouble. But they're biting off more than they can chew in some ways, because now it's quite clear that Russia supports them and Cuba and many other nations. But we saw what they did with Libya, and you're right, they destroyed most progressive country in Africa because Gaddafi was talking about establishing an African currency which would free Africans from the domination of the French and the British and the Americans and create their own currency. And he was dead shortly after suggesting that idea. And that was complete aggression. They just went in and bombed that country. Now it's a complete mess. And they're playing sides off against each other as the country is left in chaos and the people are left in complete misery. Nobody cares about the people now. And yet they bombed Libya, they said, because they cared about the Libyan people. But they don't care. They don't care about anything they do. They've destroyed Yugoslavia. It's a mess. They destroyed how many millions they killed in Korea and Vietnam. But these people have no conscience. They're a collective group of psychopaths who have no conscience and don't care about anything except enriching their own, or lining their own pockets eventually.
I would only take issue with one thing you just said. You said these people are sociopaths. I think that's a gross underestimation of how vile they are. Well, with what has been, my final thought is this, with what has been undertaken in Venezuela so far, and basing U.S. intentions on the public words of John Bolton and Pompeo, do you see any evidence the United States is already in violation of criminal acts? And why isn't the United Nations doing more?
Yes, they are in violation. They're in violation of the U.N. Charter, which Article 1, Chapter 2.4, prohibits any interference in the affairs of another state and use of force. And the General Assembly, in its Declaration of Principles, which interprets the UN Charter, has said many times that instigating unrest, or supporting acts inside another country with the intent of overthrowing a government they don't like, is considered an act of force. So, and a crime against peace, and the Nuremberg judgment says the same thing as in the case of Austria and Czechoslovakia and Poland. These conspiracies, which is what they're doing, they're engaged in a conspiracy to overthrow a legitimate government, and they're threatening military force against it as well, in order to destabilize that government. These are all acts of aggression, and they're crimes against peace. And yes, since Venezuela is a member of the International Criminal Court, nations that engage in aggression against Venezuela can be charged by the ICC. The United States is not a member of the ICC, so it cannot be charged. But Canada could be, England could be, France could be, Colombia, Brazil, and so on. But the reality of that happening is almost zero, because the International Criminal Court, although the United States is not a part of it, is controlled by the EU and the United States by placing certain key figures inside the organization, which used to work at the American-backed tribunals, the ICTY and the ICTR, the Yugoslav and Rwanda War Crimes Tribunals, which were totally run by basically NATO people. I worked there for many years, and you saw American, Canadian, and British agents in every level and every department. They ran everything. And many of those people have been transferred holus bolus into the ICC. The present prosecutor was a prosecutor of the Rwanda War Crimes Tribunal, whose job was to protect Paul Kagame, who murdered millions of people, from being charged. And he's murdered millions more in the Congo. And to support the big lie that Clinton did nothing in Rwanda, when in fact U.S. forces were directly involved in Rwanda in 1994. But they don't want that lie to come out, because then their whole justification for the war's humanitarian intervention will fall apart, because Rwanda is always used as the main reason. What happened in Rwanda? We didn't do anything. When in fact, they controlled the entire war. They did. Boutros-Boutros-Ghali said the Americans are 100% responsible for what happened in Rwanda, and it's true. But they don't want the people to know that. So
let me give you a few examples, because Rwanda was a topic I found puzzling, so I did a lot of research. Here, share additional comments if you have reference to these. Well, the general running the UN operations in Rwanda knew that there were going to be a large weapons storage place. He found out about it, and those were going to be distributed to the people so they could use those in their genocide. And he was going to go in and raid the place and take those weapons. He was told to stand down. Then when the Belgian troops and the Italian troops were withdrawn, especially around a Catholic church where there were over 2,000 men, women, and children living in some protection from them being slaughtered, he wanted to go in there and take the place of the Belgians and the Italian soldiers, and he was told to stand down. As a result, his soldiers watched as all those men, women, and children were slaughtered, hacked to death. He had people wanting to stop the killing outside of the UN headquarters. The criminals would bring women in front of his building, and they get a circle around the women, and they would just hack them throughout the day. So it would take all day for the women to bleed to death. And he wanted to stop it, and he was told to stand down. He wanted to rescue some, I think it was 10 Belgium hostages. He was told to stand down, so they all died. Every single effort he made to try to intercede and to lessen the killings and genocide, he was told to stand down. That's the story I got. How accurate is that compared to your research?
It's all false. What you've read is all false. In fact, General Dallaire was given his rules of engagement. We filed that in our trial as a piece of evidence. We had the rules of engagement. He was allowed to use deadly force as much as he wanted to save people's lives. He did nothing because he was obeying Washington and Ottawa's orders to help overthrow the government. He didn't stand down. He actively helped the invading forces from Uganda, the RPF forces, which now rule Rwanda. He actively helped them prepare for the final offensive, which took place in 1994, murdered the two presidents of Burundi and Rwanda when they shot down the plane, and then helped them launch their final offensive that night, in which the invading forces did most of the killing. It came out in our trial through the evidence over many years that almost everything you've been told about Rwanda is exactly the opposite, and that those who were killed were mainly Hutus. The other were Tutsis killed, but the majority population of Hutus were the ones that mainly suffered. And the the UN forces were not neutral as it was supposed to be to keep the peace between the two sides, but actively helped one side. They were a Trojan horse and actively helped them, bringing weapons, set up the coup, and set up the final offensive. And then when the RPF forces ran amok and began massacring everybody in sight, and then the local people reacted against them and then their allies, who were Tutsis, and killed Tutsis, General Dallaire, I think, did nothing. In fact, on April 12th, 6 days after the plane was shot down, the Rwandan army, government army, offered to surrender to the RPF and told Dallaire, we'll surrender if the opposing forces and you and us get together and go out in the streets together to stop the killing of the people who are reacting. And the RPF refused because they didn't want to negotiate with them. They wanted more people dead so they could claim there was a genocide and take over. And so everything you've been told about General Dallaire is basically false. He never sent a fax. The fax he said he sent was proved to be a forgery by the British Army, put in UN files a year and a half after the fact. I sent this to the New York Times, but they don't want to know about it. So,
and well, we want to know about it because we don't like being lied to, and we want to know the true history. What role did Bill, and more importantly, he was just a figurehead, what role did Hillary and Bill Clinton play in causing this genocide in Rwanda?
Well, they actively supported the coup and the violence which took place in 1994. We found out that just a few weeks before that final offensive took place in April 1994, which is what most people remember, they sent in 600 U.S. Army Rangers to Burundi, which were then used to in some operations inside Rwanda. We had testimony from prosecution witnesses that they saw American soldiers at RPF headquarters in Malindi, just north of Kigali, 2 days before they began the final offensive and murdered the president. And we had several people testify that they saw American-marked C-130 Hercules dropping men and supplies to the RPF lines 2 days after April 6. So you had... And we now know that Canadian C-130 Hercules, who claimed they were bringing in humanitarian supplies to Kigali Airport from April through May, were actually bringing in weapons and ammunition for the RPF under cover of humanitarian supplies. The Belgians, who were part of the UN contingent, pulled out in order to allow the RPF to run amok, to get out of their way. But they did more than that, because on the second and third day after the offensive starts, they attack government positions. The UN forces attack government positions. We had several officers testify that they were attacked by the RPF from the front and then attacked by UN Belgian machine guns from the rear. So the UN force was used as a Trojan horse, which allowed to overthrow a relatively progressive government in Rwanda, which is semi-socialist, and has replaced it with a dictatorship which still runs amok in Central Africa and the Congo and killing millions, and the Americans and support, and the Canadians support that because Kagame allows their mining companies to go into the Congo. And since the Congo is in chaos and split up, these mining companies can go in there and take out all the resources they want with very little interference.
I noticed that a few years ago, Bill Clinton went to Rwanda to talk with Kagame, and there was some kind of award ceremony. I didn't ask about who was getting an award, Kagame or Clinton, but I would have thought, and it surprised me because I thought, why would Clinton be going there to do anything with a genocidalist, a person who was responsible for all this?
Right.
And
well,
the media didn't say a word
Clinton
about it.
Clinton put him in power, because Clinton put them in power. I mean, he was trained at Fort Leavenworth, Kagame, and several other officers were trained there. But he is an American asset as well. So they put him in power, they support him, and the millions killed they could care less about. But the big lie of Clinton, of course, is that they did nothing in Rwanda. And the fact is that they did a lot of things in Rwanda, and they controlled that war.
And there's never been
Americans
a single article
I've...
I have never seen a single article showing that America had boots on the ground, and you're telling us that America, under Clinton, put boots on the ground.
Right. I've said this many times, but nobody listens to me. I mean, one of the big problems with the press is that during these war crimes trials, for instance, the Milosevic's trial was the trial of a century for 2 weeks until he began defending himself. Suddenly, it was cut off the air. Our trials of all the government officers charged in the Rwanda genocide, so-called, took place over 15 years. I defended a senior general. And he was acquitted on all the charges. And yet, if you consider him, he was the head of the National Police. In Nazi terms, he'd be the head of the Gestapo. And yet, he was acquitted on all charges, and the judges praised him. Well, how can that happen if the government committed a genocide? How can that happen that he was acquitted? Well, because we showed what really happened in that war and in many other trials at the tribunal, the defense counsel put up. We found
it. Chris, we're having a little technical difficulty, but we're at the end of the program. I'm going to invite you back for a full hour in the Progressive Commentary Hour to tell us the whole story, not abbreviated, because what you're telling us is the first time I've heard this story. And boy, is this going to be a wake-up call for those who want the truth. And you have the truth. And you're the only person I know that has this story. So we're more than welcoming you to come on. I will confer with you. We'll go over the documentation. I'm going to review all this for myself and show how we were lied, how we were set up, how the media was participating in this, how no one got the story right. And it seems like you got the right story. And history deserves to know this. And this is a rather large audience. This is the largest progressive audience of any radio program in the world. So we're not a little bit of, tiny little action of people. We make up a lot of the independents in this country, so we look forward to another conversation, all right?
Because the same thing's going on in Venezuela now, the same propaganda. So,
well, I'm glad that you were on today and sharing your insights, because that's important. And his website is christopher-black.com. And his book is How the U.S. Creates S-Hole Nations. Thank you for being on, Chris Black. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.